Demand. The beat is on demand. The beat is on demand.
Chicago Sports Conversation.
Wide, wide world of sports.
Anytime, all the time. It's The Beat on demand on iTunes and WGNRadio.com.
Welcome into The Beat on Demand. Adam Hoge here in Arizona, where the Cubs, White Sox, and yes, the Bears too, are currently operating. Spring training winding down, and the NFL owners meetings are also going on here in the Phoenix area. So I'm down here on a week-long trip catching up with all three organizations, and the Cubs and White Sox were both very generous, allowing me to sit down with their respective general managers. And in this edition of The Beat on Demand, you'll hear my extended chat with White Sox general manager Rick Hahn, who, of course, is overseeing a much different spring training operation this year as the White Sox embark on a full rebuild. I know some are skeptical that Hahn and Kenny Williams and perhaps most importantly Jerry Reinsdorf will have the patience to go through this rebuild the proper way, but I think you'll hear in this conversation that Rick Hahn is really invested in this thing. We talked a lot about that P word, patience, but we also went back and looked at the 2016 season and how it unfolded to ultimately lead to the conclusion that the White Sox needed to try a different approach. I think this will be a very enlightening conversation for Sox fans, so let's get right to it. Here he is, White Sox general manager Rick Hahn with me at Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona. Very happy to be joined by the White Sox general manager Rick Hahn here at Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona. And Rick, spring's winding down here. We're getting down to the last week.
Finally. You know, we had with the World Baseball Classic, we're here for a bonus week in spring training, which I realize I certainly don't complain to my family back home in Chicago about being stuck in these climbs for an extra week, but it does get a little bit tedious. So we're excited that we are getting towards the end and starting to get towards some games that matter.
Yeah, we're a little over a week from opening day, and let's start here. How has this spring been different from all the other springs you've been a part of with this White Sox organization?
You can. It sounds a little bit, I don't know, cheesy or difficult to quantify, but there's this just a palatable different feel and energy around here right now, and that's a tribute to Ricky and his staff in large part. What we're trying to do here is, we've made no secret, as part of this rebuild, we are trying to change the culture and the environment here. We purposely have not only Ricky as the manager, but promoted Nick Capra, our former farm director, to third base coach, and Kurt Hassler, our former minor league pitching coordinator, to bullpen coach, so that our entire major league coaching staff has deep roots in player development. And that's because we expect to obviously be a younger club here as we go through this, and we likely will have players that aren't finished products at the big league level. So teaching is going to continue in Chicago as some of these prospects come here. So we felt it was imperative to have guys with teaching in their background who know about teaching how we want the game played properly, setting priorities, communicating them to players, and holding players accountable for either meeting or not meeting those expectations. And from day one of camp, Ricky's had, you know, a contagious type of energy to him. The players have responded really well to that. The clubhouse environment's been great. You know, some of that is seeing some of this young talent that's been infused in the system over the last several months being here. And part of it is because of Ricky's energy and his staff's ability to communicate with players and teach the game.
Yeah, the benefit of that is obviously these young guys that you send off to the minor leagues now have been a part of that with Ricky throughout the last month or so. And look, you sent basically a minor league all-star team to Charlotte. And they're not there yet, but they will be.
We did all that in one day on purpose. So we settled all family business with top prospects in one day.
So I'm just curious. I mean, that's going to be exciting to kind of watch in April and May at least. Will you go to Charlotte from time to time?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And look, the fact of the matter is we are going to be tested at some points over the course of this season and possibly and likely very well into next season as well. And by that I mean in pro sports, we are all judged and we judge ourselves most naturally by wins and losses at the highest level, at the big league level. those may be a little bit scarce at times as we go through this process. So part of what we need to keep focused on is not only the process of how we're preparing for games and our scouting reports and communicating the players and executing those plans on the field at the big league level, but also what is going on at the minor league level. So we'll certainly, you know, those of us in the front office and our scouts and our instructors will absolutely go through Charlotte and Birmingham, Winston, and everywhere throughout the system. In part because that's, you know, that's normal operating procedure to make sure things are going the way we all hope, but also because that's where a lot of the brightness for the future is going to be to start the season. So we're going to want to, you know, not only keep tabs on that, but we're going to need to enjoy some of that along the way because, again, it's an extended process, and part of the fruits of that labor we're not going to see in Chicago for a little while.
I want to go back to last May. It's not really a secret that I've been kind of clamoring for this rebuild for a while now, maybe to your annoyance a little bit, but I have to admit that I was fooled a little bit by this last year's start. You know, I basically came out and admitted that I was wrong, but it was the base running was better, the defense was better. It was a lot of things that were contributing to that good start that the Sox got off to last year. So I don't know if maybe fooled, maybe not the right word, but as you look back at last year's start to the season, how real did you think it was? And were there signs, though, that it might still head south?
Well, we, as much as we enjoyed being 23-10, I don't think any of us felt we were going to play, you know, 720 ball or whatever that translated to at that point over the course of the season. We knew we weren't a 110 win team or whatever that would have extrapolated out. And we knew that for a variety of reasons, the scheduling being one of them, some of the nicks and cuts that our guys were dealing with that we knew they were pitching through, some of the things that, you know, the back end of our rotation was doing and getting away with in some of the games early on, didn't really seem sustainable. And so we certainly were prepared for a leveling off. It's part of the reason that even in the midst of that 23-10 run, we switched out John Danks, I believe, and before the thing started going south, because we wanted to solidify the back of that rotation, and we were in the market looking for other ways to improve the back of that rotation because we weren't so sure Latos was going to be able to continue along that path. One of the things that I think keeps all 30 GMs up at night is the sort of injury contingencies and the depth issues that we all have and inevitably are all going to be tested over the course of the season. And while we were sitting there in late April, early May, despite the start, we did have some concern about what was going to happen if we suffered an injury in the outfield or what was going to happen if our bullpen depth got tested. Obviously, I've already mentioned the starting rotation depth issues. So things were going well. We certainly weren't anticipating giving back all 13 games over 500 that we were as quickly as it happened, but we did have some concerns and we were in the market trying to find ways to address that, but we also knew that we needed some good luck, not just from a performance standpoint, but certainly from a health standpoint in order to get through the season at a 90 plus win pace. Unfortunately, none of that played out the way that we needed it to on that roster. And look, that's part of what we're trying to protect ourselves against next time around. The next time we get off to a quality start or have a roster capable of winning 90 to 100 games, part of that is going to be because we have the depth to withstand the inevitable underperformance or injuries that are part of every big league season. We just didn't have the depth. Austin Jackson goes down in center field and we're forced into playing JB Chuck on a regular basis. All due respect to JB, that's not a championship caliber everyday player. He's got a role on a championship roster. It's not that. From a bullpen standpoint, we lose Petrica, we lose Putnam. Matt Elbers, who was doing very well in an early lower leverage role, gets pushed into a later higher leverage role and starts giving back some of that progress. Just didn't have the depth of quality back-end type reliever alternatives on that club. And as I pointed out, we didn't have it at the back end of the rotation either. So next time around, we need to, and part of what we're trying to build through this rebuild is enough critical mass to have a championship roster, not just perhaps as we did last year, 1 through 8 or 1 through 9, but not even 1 through 25 is what we're looking for. We're looking to have quality alternatives, 30, through 32 or ideally 40 so that we have a lot of options to withstand what happens over the course of a championship season.
White Sox general manager Rick Hahn with us here on 720 WGN. So at what point did the organization come to the conclusion that you guys made to go in this new direction? Because you look back in the middle of last year and everything you just went through, which was, I appreciate the depth you just did. You also go out and acquire James Shields at one point. And then, you know, by the time we get to the trade deadline, though, it becomes apparent that, okay, there could be some major moves being made here to unload, whether that's now or into the off season. So when did that – how did you kind of juggle that process and maybe whether to pull that trigger at the trade deadline or to wait, obviously, towards the winter meetings like you did with Chris Sale?
Right. Now, the Shields transaction was obviously one designed to stem the tide and to help that 2016 team stop taking on water, solidify – I was supposed to solidify the back end of the rotation and, you know, help level us out and keep us in contention. It obviously wasn't a move geared towards the long term. Within a few weeks after that transaction, not only was it clear that wasn't serving its intended purpose, but the other issues were deeper and that it was likely a season that was not going to turn itself around. So the decision to undertake the rebuild, so to speak, was made, I would say, my dates are going to be a little messed up, but late June, early July, probably late June, Jerry, Kenny, and myself had, you know, had a number of honest conversations trying to be objective as possible about where we were as a club, not only in 16, but more importantly, what did we have going forward in 17? What were the minor league prospects that we had on hand that were going to be able to help us contend in 17? What was our cash situation going forward in terms of flexibility to add guys from the open market, and what potential trade pieces were going to be there in order to try to continue down this path of patchworking this thing together. There were other instances along the history since I've been with the club where we could have taken this path. 07 was one of them. We chose not to and wound up winning the division in 08. 2010 was another. 13 was another. But it wasn't really until midway through last season that these conversations that Jerry, blessed exploring this path. And we did do that leading up to the deadline. Obviously, we wound up just moving Zach Duke for Charlie Tilson, which is a move geared towards the longer term, but obviously isn't one that announces a extensive rebuild the way a Chris Sale or an Adam Eaton trade would. The fact is we would have pulled the trigger on a Sale deal or an Eaton deal or another premium-type player deal at the time of the deadline, but there just wasn't that caliber of offer that we felt was appropriate to move forward then. So it took into the offseason, even though we knew at the time that our direction wasn't necessarily clear to White Sox fans and that certainly a relatively minor move in terms of a rebuild wasn't really going to resonate that much, but we knew we had to be patient.
So let's fire through some of these guys that are clearly part of the future. Lucas Giolito, you acquire in the trade with the Nationals for Adam Eaton. When that trade went down, I remember going through some stories just trying to read up on him and concerns about his velocity, maybe that being a reason why the Nationals were willing to let him go or part with him. What did you see from him in spring training so far?
Well, look, Lucas was the highest profile name in that trade simply because he had the former first round pedigree and had made it to the big leagues and was also, you know, widely regarded as quote unquote the best right-handed pitching prospect in baseball. So that's the headline grabber. That trade was as much about Ronaldo Lopez from our standpoint in terms of being a quality front-end pitching prospect who could help us now, as well as getting a guy like Dane Dunning, as it was about Lucas Giolito alone. We wanted if we were going to move Adam, who we think is a championship-caliber player and obviously signed for an extended period of time, it had to be for a premium-type package, which isn't based on just one player. Lucas impressed us in camp this year, being how mature he is for his age, how well he knows his delivery, how well he takes instruction, as well as the drive to be great. He, you know, one of these things that I talked about with each of the guys we acquired who were in big league camp when we were sending them out is this is a long-term process for us. This proving us right isn't going to happen in your next start or your next at-bat, and it's probably not even going to happen this year. And it certainly isn't going to happen because one of you does something. It's going to be because of how this group comes together. And I think Lucas, and to an extent, Michael Kopech, early on sort of wanted to meet the hype and prove that they're that dude who was such a focal point in, of our offseason, which is great. I like that fight. I like that desire to prove guys right. But it's not going to happen that quickly. And Lucas, you know, Washington last year was in a situation that we want to be in, where every win counts. They're competing for a championship. They're trying to set their October rotation. They had a need, so they brought one of their most talented guys to the big leagues, despite the fact they only had a handful of starts at AAA. We're not going to do that this year. That's not where we're at. We have the luxury of allowing Lucas Giolito or Kopech or Lopez or whomever develop at their own natural pace and have them come to Chicago once they've answered just about all the questions you have for them at the minor league level, and they're ready to, for the challenge of the big league level. Again, you know, anything to happen in Moncada's brief debut or Lucas's brief debut or Lopez last year, who pitched pretty well for Washington, doesn't change how we evaluate them or how they fit for us going forward. It's just they were in a different spot, and now we have the chance to sort of finish off that development as opposed to arguably rushing them.
I know you can't tell the future, but in your ideal world, how does 2017 play out for Yoan Moncada?
That's a great question. You know, he's obviously also a very high-profile guy and also very young. You know, he's 22 years old and has, I think, fewer than 200 plate appearances above A-ball right now, which people lose sight of because
right.
of he, you know, came on the scene with such notoriety and splash and did make it to the big leagues last year. For us, obviously, he's starting the year at AAA for us. He'll be our everyday second baseman there. We want him to you know, get comfortable with the defensive repetition there, the speed of the game at that level, continue his development at the plate, which is he has got a pretty refined approach at the plate, but now in more of a breaking ball league, which is what AAA tends to be, pitchers are going to mess with him a little bit. So let him get used to that as opposed to pitchers trying and failing to outstuff him at AA. Eventually, it's going to be time for him to come to Chicago and get used to the speed of the game at the big league level. You can't really replicate that at the minor leagues. You know, we don't have. I have in my mind a general sense of how long he'll be in Charlotte, and a general sense of how many big league at bats it would be nice to see him get this year. So we go into 18 feeling comfortable that he's ready to be an everyday guy. But the good ones have a way of sort of changing those plans, and the baseball gods tend to laugh at these plans, right. too. So we're going to remain nimble, but he had a very fine camp. It was funny, about 2 weeks or so before we sent him out, he punched out four times in a game, and I had a reporter grab me the next day saying, "Are you worried about Moncada?" And you know, I think he wound up going on, and of course we weren't at spring training. Yeah. Unless
that's kind of when it turned around for him.
And then, yeah, starting the next day, he went nuts, and I think he wound up walking out of here with like a 1050 OPS, despite having a really slow start. So, again, we have our plans. They have the good ones have a way of changing them.
Right. Why was it important to lock up Tim Anderson right now?
A couple of reasons. We obviously view Timmy as an important piece to a championship team. We have a guy here who plays a premium position, who we like his offensive profile. We like how he's responded defensively to the challenge of the big league level. That said, two things I think it's important not to lose sight of. One, he's not a finished product by any stretch. He still has some areas of his game that need to improve, one of them being the plate discipline. He knows that, and he's working on that. He's always been, for lack of a better description, which I don't really like, relatively raw in that he was a two-sport guy and late comer to baseball, and repetition was always going to be an important thing for him. That said, he really carried himself well and acclimated himself at the big league level. So while there's still room for improvement, we've got confidence that he's going to be able to follow through on that room for improvement. Excuse me. The second thing is we're not looking for him to be the guy. We're looking for him to be one of the guys that mm-hmm. we put out there over the course of this championship run that we're trying to build for. Now, at this juncture, even though it was a little bit early in his career, and as I said, he's not a finished product, and we expect him to continue to develop, which will have some ups and downs, now is the opportunity to get that not only cost certainty, but the extended control. And by that, I mean we currently had Timmy under control for the next 6 years. By doing the contract now, we now have control of him over the next 8 years and through his age 31 season. So if he winds up developing the way we projected, And even if he falls a little bit short of what the upside that you could project for a player like that, we think he's going to be a pretty special guy, and now was the opportunity to take perhaps a little bit early or a little bit aggressive of a risk on a player like this, given his limited exposure at the big league level. But we really think the payoff's going to be great, especially with the added control over the next 8 years.
Yeah, there's no question it could work out great for both sides.
Exactly.
If the career goes the way you guys are both hoping. I want to end with kind of more of a broader baseball question. How much of the World Baseball Classic were you able to watch?
It's funny. I'm a bit of a mixed bag on that. Like when Q was starting against Team USA, I was out in my backyard here smoking a cigar and occasionally checking on Twitter what was going on. Mm-hmm. Now, then my phone started blowing up as he was dealing, and then, you know, from various other GMs and people in the organization and a few media people being like, oh, you got to be loving this. You got to be loving this. So I think it makes all 30 of the GMs individually nervous about their own guys, mm-hmm. especially starting pitchers early in March, throwing pitches in anger when they aren't really traditionally used to doing that. But boy, oh boy, it meant so much to Q and so much to Gonzalez, and obviously a great experience for Katz and Goldberg with Team Israel, and now Robbie and Jonesy got to win the thing. So it's great for the game overall, and I enjoyed watching like Team Israel against Cuba. Like, that was an entertaining game, and you gotta love watching the Dominicans and Puerto Rican and the Venezuelan teams play. Like, that's entertaining as heck. From a risk management standpoint, it drives me nuts individually.
Yeah.
So I come and go is what I say. I can watch, I can enjoy the tournament overall, but when it's our individual guys, I tend to hide my eyes.
As a fan watching, the excitement level with these guys was so just fun to watch, and you kind of wish that would manifest itself in a May, you know, whatever game it during the season. And I understand, you know,
it's
not going to be the same because that's more of a playoff atmosphere than anything else. But I just wonder how we can all make that part of the regular season too, since it is so long.
It's tough with 162 games.
Yeah.
It's tough like that. I mean, you see it sometimes during certain rivalries or during big games later in the season, but you're right. It's more of a playoff atmosphere that they replicated. And certainly you see it in October, and it's our goal to be a more regular participant in that going forward.
Well, it'll be great. Thanks so much for joining me today, Rick. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks to Rick Hahn for being very generous with his time and for being so detailed in why late last June Jerry Reinsdorf finally gave his blessing to go through a rebuild. And for more on that rebuild, please check out the story I wrote from Camelback Ranch this week, which you can find on WGNRadio.com. It's going to be very interesting to see how the first wave of prospects are handled this year in the minors, and it sure sounds like they won't be rushed, and that is, of course, the right way to do this thing. The same way the Cubs did it, and Cubs general manager Jed Hoyer knows a little something about that. If you enjoyed this interview with Rick Hahn, I urge you to also check out my conversation with Jed Hoyer, which you can find on WGNRadio.com, or if you are listening to this right now on iTunes or the TuneIn app or the WGN Radio app, you'll find the Jed Hoyer episode of The Beat on Demand right next to this one. So please take a listen and feel free to hit that subscribe button for more podcasts from The Beat, which, by the way, you can listen to live every Saturday and Sunday on WGN Radio. Mark Carmen, Jared Payton, and myself are all part of the shows, Saturday from 4 to 7 p.m. Central and Sundays from 3 to 6 p.m. Central on 720 WGN. Again, I'm Adam Hoge. Thanks for listening to The Beat on Demand.
This has been The Beat on Demand. Listen to The Beat on the air, Saturdays and Sundays at 3 p.m. on 720 WGN.